Hey, do you want to be like me and make podcasts that everyone loves? Yeah, you do. But chances are, you don't want to spend a bunch of money doing it. No worries. A solution exists. Spotify's got a platform that lets you make podcasts super easy, then distribute those podcasts everywhere, and you can even earn money doing it. All in one place for free. It's called Spotify for Podcasters, and here's how it works. Spotify for Podcasters lets you record and edit podcasts right from your phone or computer. So no matter what your setup is like, you can start creating today. Then you can distribute your podcast to Spotify and everywhere else podcasts are heard. Also, you can earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. I'm speaking from experience when I say that all those additional features like video podcasts, Q&As, polls, those are things you won't find for cheap elsewhere. But with Spotify for Podcasters, it's all totally free. No catch. I highly recommend you give it a try. Download the Spotify for Podcasters app or go to www.spotify.com/podcasters to get started. Thanks. We love you. Everybody, welcome to Pretty Scary.
Pretty Scary Boo.
Pretty Scary Boo. Caitlin, she's never going to say another fucking thing on this podcast, is she?
She has went mute.
She's got a real attitude lately. And she's not coming out of it. Lately.
I don't appreciate it.
Yeah.
She didn't start this way.
Yeah. She, like, if you listen to the older episodes, she talked a lot.
She would do voices.
She would contribute.
Yeah.
And now it's like she's just kind of in the room but not saying anything. And
I cannot wait
until
she is over whatever she's going through. She's like a teenager right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's just wait it out.
Yeah. How about we just ignore her?
Yes.
While she's in the room.
She'll come back to us when she's ready.
And we'll see how she likes it.
Right. And then she can say, Pretty Scary Boo, on her own.
Right. On her own. It's like she has to say it with you.
No. At that point, I tag out.
Oh.
To prove a point.
Oh, yeah. That makes more sense, obviously. You have a score to settle at that point.
It's about the principle.
Yeah, yeah. So I have messaged you maybe 18 times in the past week to ask when you leave for Vegas. And you leave for Nashville tomorrow.
I sure do.
I feel like you're still going to end up in Vegas.
I don't know how you thought I was going to Vegas because I never said Vegas. I think you were so enamored with your own recent Vegas trip.
Did you know I went?
Yes. Yes. And I know that you saw Zach Bagans.
Haunted Museum. Yes.
And I did talk to somebody about that. And they did say it was pretty awesome.
It's
and that
really
I
cool.
should go.
You should go.
They didn't say much about the Pawn Star place.
I bought a t-shirt there. That's how much of an impact that place made on me.
And then you got to hang out with your friend Portugal.
My friend Portugal, the man. Mm-hmm. Just one dude named Portugal.
I mean, he's got a Grammy. Like, let's cut him some slack, right?
Yeah.
He can be just one
yeah.
man.
You can have a weird name like Portugal if you have a
period,
Grammy.
The man.
Right.
Period.
And people don't realize you pronounce the period in that name. It's Portugal period the man.
Period.
Right.
Okay.
Or you can say Portugal dot the man.
If
you know them, you can call them that.
Don't.
Right. So I wouldn't push it. I would wait till
well,
you're comfortable.
I won't. Yeah, I am going to Nashville.
For?
The Las Vegas of...
The South?
Is in the South? Tennessee?
Yeah.
Oh, the South-ish?
Yeah.
Yes, so CrimeCon starts tomorrow, which will have been like a couple weeks
ago. A long time ago.
Yeah,
but well, this one, because it's a little more timely, I might put it up soon.
Okay, so I may or may not have been at CrimeCon already. Interestingly enough, John Chevsky and Rich Slayton from Crime, the pod, were on my flight.
Nice.
It was enjoyable, although I hate flying. And I also rode with Jamie Rice, the host of Murderish podcast. And I told her, I was like, I'm a very nervous flyer. And then literally like a week before my flight, somebody was like, oh, did you see that Southwest flight? And I think they were talking about the one you had mentioned about there was a hole in the side of the Southwest plane. And
yeah, one of the engines blew out.
And chair, right? She got sucked over.
Right. She got sucked into the side of the plane, and the impact from hitting the plane is what killed her.
That's some shit.
That is some shit, because then you die on a flight, but you're the only person that dies on that flight.
But then it's like, what you do is like, okay, this lady in front of me, thankfully she's blocking the hole.
Right.
But also, she's dead.
Right.
Like, how much longer till we land?
Well, then the question is, carry on to your destination?
And are you in the middle of a movie? Like,
right. Like, if she's already dead, yeah, it's like, why?
She's in the way.
Yeah.
I can't see the screen.
Yeah, can't you just, like, tape that hole up and carry on?
Move her? Where's the beverage cart?
Chuck her out the hole.
Ding. No, we can't do that, because then I can fly out the hole. We need something to stop it until we land.
That's a good point.
Yes. And, again, where is that beverage cart?
Right, right.
Don't let this
now more than
you.
Ever people need yes. to drink.
100%.
We've just witnessed a death.
Will
in
I
the
pay
sky.
$5? No, I won't pay $5.
No, that drink.
I will
on...
take this complimentary.
Yeah, that drink is on Southwest.
Extra peanuts and pretzels, please.
All right, so we're talking about the Golden State Killer today. Maybe you've heard the name in the news recently, America.
Ugh. I had first heard of the Golden State Killer last year at the very first Crime Con, and that is where I met Billy Jensen, who does a lot of crime-related articles and TV shows. And he ended up finishing the book that Michelle McNamara wrote. So he finished it with Patton Oswalt and I think another writer.
Whoever was helping her research it is the other person that finished it with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my apologies. I don't
yeah,
remember
we had
the
this,
name.
We have this in the notes at the end. But okay. Yeah, that is, it's an interesting wrinkle to the story.
I think it was so dormant for so long, though, because we were going to have him on White Wine True Crime. And
Patton Oswalt.
Billy Jensen.
Oh, okay.
And he doesn't live too far away. And he's like, yeah, like I want the whole White Wine True Crime experience. I'm going to come. I'm going to Uber down. And then we're like, do you want to talk about the Golden State Killer? And I think he had just finished the book and he was like, I just need a breather. But
I mean, it's been
a couple of years and now it's like, oh, even though they say that nothing from the book helped them solve the case, it still is just like crazy vindication. And I really thought this case would never be solved.
So in the book, do they point to this guy as
no, I don't believe suspect? There were any suspects, and it wasn't even on the police's radar. I did see People Magazine.
Because it's a crazy story how this guy got caught.
Well, People Magazine recently did a show. They have a show called People Magazine Investigates on the Investigation Discovery Channel, and they had that guy that I believe Detective Holes.
Yeah.
Very attractive, by the way.
Oh,
and
nice.
And you can tell he's super smart, and he was just on this mission, and obviously we're going to get into it, to
right.
find this guy. And you can just tell he's so smart, but like everything that he would find, and he's probably about 45, 50. So, I mean, he wasn't...
Because he's retiring.
He's probably... He's retired
yeah.
now mm-hmm. or about to retire.
Yeah, well...
Because he's not that old. He
yeah,
really...
Yeah, well, it's also in the notes, but yeah, when he... did what finally when he started doing the thing that finally cracks this case, he was 9 months from retiring, and he had yeah. been researching this or investigating this for like 24 years and was like, this was kind of my last ditch thing to
if
try
you guys
and
get a chance
case.
To watch the People Magazine Investigates the Golden State Killer, and now they have one with the update where it talks a little bit about the Golden State Killer's arrest, you know,
right,
presumably him. It's so interesting because this guy just deep dives and analyzes everything. And you just know, like, he's a smart motherfucker.
Yeah.
And again, I think he's retiring just to be hot. I think he's just going to spend the rest of his years being hot.
What better way to go out? Like, you're still, like, 45, 50, that's not that old. And you've just solved one of the biggest fucking cold cases
yeah.
in history. Yeah, just go out and be it's hot like, on the speaking circuit for a few years.
Oh, and 100%. What else are you going to do? Yeah. And I'm sure he would and he could and make a lot of
you
money.
You will meet him at CrimeCon next year.
Oh, my God. I will figure out a way to make out with him. I haven't figured it out yet. I don't even know if he's married. He is my new Ryan Ferguson.
Sure.
I'm saying it here. He is on my radar. Mr. Holes, you are on my radar. Okay, well, I guess we can talk about the case.
Mr. Holes.
I know. You make some jokes about it, which I find inappropriate only because he is good looking. And everyone knows you can't make fun of good looking people.
That's a good point. Yeah. So, yeah, we're just going to... I had heard the name the Golden State Killer, but I hadn't ever looked into this case that much, and I didn't know...
Well, he had so many different monikers.
Yeah, he's got so many different monikers. His original name was the Visalia Ransacker, and then the East Area Rapist, and then the original Night Stalker.
Which would be confusing and a little bit of a slap in the face to, like, the Night Stalker.
But he stopped right as... The next Night Stalker started.
But he's not called the next Night Stalker, although that would be funnier if he was.
Night Stalker Part 2. Yeah.
Night Stalker Jr.
Yeah, they kind of like retrofitted this guy with the original Night Stalker name.
I felt like it was like a...
Because they were like, no, yeah. we're not going to have like a Mexican name. Guy be the original Night Stalker.
This guy, let's this get, blonde, blue-eyed, yeah, German, let's whatever, get this protege.
Aryan wonder in as the original Night Stalker.
We're just going to slip it in and leave this moniker right here next to the other 18.
And so it was kind of like as his crimes escalated, he just got better and better names. And then when they finally culminated in the Golden State Killer, which is one of the coolest serial killer nicknames of all time.
I mean, it's kind of preppy.
It's kind of preppy, but it's got gold in the name. Right. Like, it sounds like he won an award of some sort.
Well,
like,
in there a was way, a contest. I mean, he was a fucking badass. I mean, he did some shit.
He did some shit, to say the least.
That should be on his tombstone. I did some shit and shit.
So we're going to talk about some of his different personas and the various crimes he committed. This is one of the boldest criminals. Right. Of all time, like hands down.
He escaped getting caught so many times.
So many times and would keep committing crimes and then in that same area.
But then he just kind of stopped after 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's rare for a serial killer to do that. So typically if that happens, they're arrested and incarcerated and physically can't commit it. Or they're dead and physically can't commit it. It's rare for them just to stop to be like, I had a good run.
Yeah, and they think that's kind of
what happened. What that it is, he started is he just, a family.
Yeah, he just got too old and tired to do the shit anymore.
Yeah, he sowed his wild killing oats.
He is the Michael Jordan of serial killers. He just retired on top. Well, no, he got caught, though. So that.
How's his sneaker line?
I would wear them.
The GSKs.
They're very quiet.
Don't make a lot of full of air.
Don't make a lot of noise when you. Step on a hardwood floor. And
when you watch, and again, I'm going to keep plugging this because I do think it was well done, the People magazine one where they talk about this. There was a couple instances where they were like, we talked to the rape victims. He had a really small dick. I mean, it didn't really matter to the case, I guess, but it was just funny that they had to throw out that shade. So now when I look at his face, I'm like, you small dick motherfucker.
Yeah, you small dick piece of shit.
It makes so much sense.
It does.
He just looks angry, by the way.
Yeah, he's an angry dude. So let's talk about his first run of crimes as the Visalia Ransacker, which we get pretty deep into this before this even turns bad. Mm-hmm. Because up to a point, this is just almost funny. He is suspected to have committed more than 100 crimes in Visalia, California, which I'm surprised there are even that many crime targets in Visalia, California. I don't even know what that town is like, but I know what that town is like. I can just picture it. So I'm surprised.
Is it right outside of San Francisco?
No, it's probably deep north, I would think.
Like, what's the population?
Because he was in the Sacramento area.
Right. So that's like Redwood City, like kind of like hippie, almost Oregon, densely populated.
Yeah, but also kind of militia-esque. Like, that's where all of California's Trump voters are like up there. I mean, and in Southern California, obviously, too. Orange County.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he was active under this persona from March 1974 to late 1975. And in most of these crimes, he would just break in the house and, like, ransack shit and arrange the people's household items in weird order and take, like, really stuff of really minimal value. But what's creepy is it seemed like he wanted to take things that would matter to a person or things that were irreplaceable. Like, he would take piggy banks and, like, blue chip stamps, which I don't know if you've ever heard of those. They're like these things you could send in for products or some shit.
I think I've made this clear before, but I'm not a nerd, and I do not know what that means.
Okay. I'll try to remember for next time.
Please. This is getting embarrassing for you.
So, yeah, he would just take shit that, you know, was not that. And then he would leave, like, money and really valuable shit laying around the house. Just completely unnoticed.
Just really quickly, Adam, how do you spell burglary?
All right, here's the thing. I have this in the notes because I want to be honest with the listeners.
We want you to be honest.
And I want people to know what my past has been like. So we've talked about spelling bees before.
Because both of us have been in them and on TV.
Right. We were both on television. The Journal Star Spelling Bee, I'm assuming? Yes. In grade school. And I'm always quick to point out that when I made my TV debut, I had beaten an eighth grader in the school spelling bee because she misspelled alien, which I was like, what the fuck? You're in eighth grade?
Get your shit together.
Yeah, someone hold this dame back.
And, like, what convenience store is she working at now?
Exactly. Yeah. And I was in fifth grade and I beat her because she misspelled such an easy word. But then eighth grade rolls around, and by this time I'm straight West Coasting, even though I'm still in Peoria. So I'm not even thinking about
Midwest Coasting.
Midwest Coasting.
Mississippi Riverin.
So I'm not even thinking about the spelling bee, but it comes to pass that the eighth grade has no delegate to send in the school spelling bee. So I'm like, I can spell some shit. I will go handle this. And I go unpracticed. I just go.
Like, you had a spelling chip on your shoulder.
Like, I was like, oh, you need put me in, coach. Like, I was a mercenary at this point.
Right.
And I get to the final round. It's me and a fifth grader. And I misspelled the word burglar. And I lost. Because I spelled it. B-U-R-G-U-L-A-R, which is burglar. And
why did you think there was that extra U?
Maybe it's because I'm not a criminal. Maybe it's because I'm just a clean-cut kid from the Midwest who enjoys a spelling bee every once in a while.
The best is the look of defeat when you get dinged. Because I still have my video. And whenever I show my friends, which isn't that often, but when I do take them to my mom's house in Arizona, she loves to pull out that tape.
I would like to see it.
Where I'm in seventh grade. Literally, I think I've talked about this before. I am dressed like Mindy Irwin, where I've got, like, head to toe, tan khaki, like, long prairie skirt, like a button up, like, short sleeve, shirt. And I have poofy bangs and a long braid running down my back and pink plastic glasses. And when I got on Traitorous, I was like, oh, stupid. And the look of defeat on my face. And I just remember I was like, but we just went to Godfather's Pizza the night before to celebrate. And now I feel like I'm going home a failure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Godfather's.
It was a quiet ride home.
I bet. Did they invoice you for the Godfather's later?
No, they just docked it from my allowance.
Yeah, it's coming out of your allowance. So that was just a fun sidebar in this horrifying story. I also have in the notes that I am not the Golden State Killer, despite that story.
Thank you.
Anyway, so yeah, he would just, like, sometimes he would steal a single earring or a single cufflink, which I love that. And he would also do this multiple times per day. At one point on...
Why do you love that? Because he's November, just, like, fucking with people.
Because it's at that point, it's just like a prank almost.
Because it's like, where did I put that? where he's obviously towing the line.
Right. Where you wouldn't even
what I can get away with and yeah, this will make them go insane.
On November 30th, 1974, he did this 12 times in a day. So up to this point, if the crime spree had stopped there, this would be such a lighthearted tale.
I feel like by the 12th time, I'd be like heaving myself up through a window like, do I even want to do this one? I guess. Okay, let's just go and get this over with so I can get home.
Yeah, maybe he got to 13 and was like,
I don't think I can go in this one. Okay, I'm going to head home. And then what do? You go home and watch TV and like order takeout like a normal person?
It seems like that's what a lot of these dudes do. They just go home
where they compartmentalize it.
Live a normal life. That's what the Green River Killer did.
One of the things that it does not get into is what his trigger was. And again, if you watch, it doesn't matter, I plugged it enough. Anyway, if you watch any shows about the Golden State Killer that this Holes guy is on, he does talk about the fact that this guy has some psychosomatic issues, I believe, from his past. I'll wait till you get to it, but at one of the locations, they believe he dropped a notebook.
Right.
You've got that. Okay, so I'll talk about it when you get there.
Yeah, I don't know if I put all of that in the notes, but you're right. He dropped a notebook, and it had one page was an essay about General Custer, and then there was a story about a teacher in sixth grade that punished him.
Yes.
And made him write a bunch of lines over
and
over.
And he never forgot it.
And it was so humiliating to him, which that's the kind of thing you hear it and it's like, okay, but also he's crazy.
Right.
That normal, a lot of people have had to do what he's described.
Right.
And it doesn't make them commit 51 rapes in the span of 3 years.
There was another page too, where it had almost like a park.
It had a punishment map is what it was written on it. And it was a diagram of a neighborhood.
Yes, a neighborhood.
And they were never able to identify exactly what neighborhood it was.
But they were trying to figure this Mr. Holes guy was my future husband was
right.
Trying to figure out if he was like an architect or something with construction.
Right.
And if that's why he had it. So that was one path that they were being led down as possibly he was into that. Because it was not great drawings, but it was very detailed.
Right. They said it was obvious he had very intimate knowledge of whatever area that mm-hmm. was, like including architecture and like the interior of some of the places and shit like that.
Oh, yeah. I think he robbed one of the places and some lady was like, oh, yeah, that looks like my house, or my neighbor's house. Like she kind of recognized the area that he had drawn.
Yeah. And this all everything we're talking about now, this all happens like in those first few years before mm-hmm. he really starts murdering people. Because under every one of these periods in his life, he does kill at least one person. So there's no, even as the Visalia ransacker.
He got a slow start. It's almost like when he was stealing cufflinks and, you know, parts of earrings, it was like pot to him.
Yeah.
It was like a gateway.
Yeah, it was building up to something. And that's why I say if the story stopped there, the Visalia ransacker is just a fucking merry prankster in ransacking people's houses and taking one cufflink. But he would also steal weapons and ammunition. And at one point on September 11th, 1975, never forget.
Okay.
He committed his one and only murder as the Visalia ransacker. Mm-hmm. And what happened is he broke into the house of this guy named Claude Snelling. And Claude Snelling in February of that year had chased away a prowler who was underneath his daughter's window. And that kind of relates to something we'll talk about later, because this guy, as he develops, he really makes a point of surveillance mm-hmm. and really stalking an area out and learning a person's habits before he would attack them. And it seems like that's maybe what happened here, because when this Claude Snelling, they never identify this prowler that he chased away in February. But then in September of that same year, he hears some kind of commotion in his house and goes to investigate. This was 2:22 in the morning when he's awoken, and he finds a man in the carport of his house attempting to abduct his daughter.
Right.
And when he discovers this guy, the guy shoots Claude Snelling. And after shooting Claude Snelling, he flees on a bike, which is also this guy's MO. The Golden State Killer always used bikes or would escape through yards and
canals,
schools,
woods,
and things.
Yep.
And so Claude Snelling dies a short time later. So this is the first murder committed by this guy that we know of. And he murders Claude Snelling. And then on December 12th, he's almost caught trying to break into another house because they had police in this area had taken to literally hiding in garages near other places he'd broken into, just hoping he would break in there and they could catch him and this would all be over. And that works. A detective named William McGowan was hiding in a garage and the Golden State Killer, or at this time the Visalia Ransacker, shows up and McGowan fires a warning shot and the guy, they said he shrieked and snatched his mask off and pretended like he was surrendering. And as soon as he put his hands up and went to his knees, he fired a shot at McGowan and hit his flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
So the flashlight explodes in this guy's hand. Now it's dark again. And the police rush to that guy and he's able to get away.
Yes. And I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about who he is later. But they do have suspicions for a while that he's either in the military or, and I think part of that is because of the knots that he tied. It was called a diamond knot.
Right.
Or that he was something like a policeman or police official, I guess, who had weapon and authority and had some of that know-how as well.
Right. Because he, and yeah, that's another one of his names was the Diamond Knot Killer. And mm-hmm. that's, I think that all happened when he gets to Southern California and starts actually committing real murders. That was one of the characteristics of his crimes. He would always tie people up with this really specific knot. So after this shooting happens, the second shootout with the police, that's the end of his crimes in Visalia. And he moves on to the Sacramento area and becomes the East Area Rapist. And this is an insane fucking story. He was active from June 1976 to July 1979. Carrie, where were you during this time?
Born.
Okay, so we can't rule you out.
I was alive. I was born July 1976 in Peoria, Illinois.
Mm.
I was being groomed at an early age to be part of the Peoria Spelling Bee, so that's exactly where I was.
Oh, okay.
Where were you?
Same. I was being born in Peoria also.
Either of us
could actually be this guy.
Yeah, well, yes. Either of us could be this dude. Yeah, 100%. Totally.
So his initial MO when he moves to this area is he would stalk middle-class neighborhoods looking for women who were home alone or who lived alone and usually in single-story homes near a school or a creek or something that would allow him to escape mm-hmm. really quick. And he was spotted so many times during this crime spree. Like people would just see him and he would run away. They'd be like, oh shit, I bet that's the guy doing all them rapes. And he would just go back and rape again and again, sometimes at the same place. He would be spotted in the yards of people's homes where he would eventually commit these attacks. And they would just see this guy for a few days beforehand. And he would still do this shit. It's insane.
I mean, the ball's on this guy, but we will come to learn that he was affiliated with law enforcement. So if worse came to worse, hey, I'm on the job. So he kind of had an out, and I think that probably helped some of his cockiness. I don't know what kind of mental test that, like, policemen and firemen, like, I know there's, like, extensive background checks. So
yeah.
I don't know how it was back in the 70s, but still, like, the psychological evaluation. And I think a little bit about Aaron Hernandez when they're like, he scored really poorly when the NFL took a psychology analysis of him. Like, his street smarts and his book smarts. And, like, I think he was bordering on, you know, psychosis when they tested him. And he had one of the, like, lowest scores ever, but they still hired him. And then look what happened. It's like, is it worth it?
Yeah, this guy, he was... We'll talk about it later, but he was a cop in Exeter, California, and Auburn, California. So I imagine...
Is that also by Sacramento?
I think so. They're like Northern California somewhere. Okay. But I imagine there was probably a less stringent screening process.
And again, God, back then?
Yeah.
I mean, you know by the time this guy gets caught, because I think most people thought like, okay, he's dead.
Right.
He's in jail, whatever. But probably dead. It was so long ago, especially if it stopped in 86.
Right.
Carry the one. Is that 30 years?
Yes. About 32 years.
That it was kind of a done deal that even if he did live out his years, he would be dead by now. Like there was no and you know, he thought, and they even said when they captured him, which we'll get to, he was completely surprised. Like, it's been 30 years.
Right.
Like, I know I did some damage, but it was 30 years ago.
Yeah, let it slide. Come on.
So if I'm 41.
Hold a grudge much?
What should I do at 11? You know what I mean? Like, I might have some unreturned library books.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. It's insane. So, yeah, he would stalk several homes at once before deciding on one to attack. And it's also believed he would sometimes break into the house ahead of time to unlock windows, unload guns, and plant items to use as ligatures. He would also call people, and he would do it sometimes just like, hey, is Ron there? And they would, no, we don't know Ron. Okay, bye. And sometimes he would call and go, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. And then he'd show up and fucking kill people.
I hate talking on the phone.
I do too.
I'm not saying this is why, but I'm saying that this doesn't help persuade me to ever answer the phone.
Exactly.
But back in the day, I feel like everybody answered the phone. Like, you didn't have a choice. Like, if it rang, like, that's what you did.
Yeah. And now,
like, this guy again.
Now, if he used this technique on me, he'd just be like, oh, that guy's never near his phone.
Yeah.
I can break in any time, and then he'll show up at 10:30 in the morning and I'll hear him breaking through the door and I'll be like, what the fuck, bro? I'm home. You could have called first.
Yeah. Like the no caller ID or whatever. Like, I don't know. I don't answer any of them. Yeah. I don't answer any of them. I don't know who's calling me. When I get random numbers, I'm like, I really don't know how they got my number.
Yeah. I have to be expecting a call to answer it.
And even when I know people, I rarely answer. Like,
yeah.
Text me. That's what messaging is for.
But back then, it was so different. Like, back then, the phone rings and you're like, oh, shit, it might be for me. I have to answer it.
Right, because usually it's a whole household.
Right. And so he would, but what he was doing was trying to get a feel for this person's schedule and figure out when they're home, when they're not home. But then he would also sometimes, after he had attacked someone, he would call them again and threatened to attack them again. At one point, they think he just randomly walked into a Denny's and saw one of his victims working there, so called her like 2 years after he had attacked her and called her at work, which that's unsettling.
That's what pisses me off so much. I mean, okay, so all of this is bad?
Sure.
Right. But the fact that it's like, not only did you do the act, but then you torment them and then you go on to marry somebody and have
right.
a family.
Yeah.
So whether it's boys or girls, but it's, I mean, honestly, especially girls, because that's who you're attacking. What if that was your daughter and somebody called her while she was schlubbing away at a Wendy's? Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like,
yeah.
There was one case, and I cannot think of what they called this killer, but he had abducted a girl as she was getting out of her car, I believe. It was like right in front of her house or whatever. And somebody had abducted her at like the mailbox. And then so her family was like super religious, and he had her write out her last will and testament, knowing that she was going to be murdered. So she had to write to her family like, hey, I love you, by the way, like, I'm going to die. I know I'm going to die. This guy's going to kill me. You know, like, live on, you know, pray for me. I hope you're happy, blah, blah, blah. And then mailed it. So they got it, I believe, after she was dead. But he would call and torment the family and would talk especially to the mother and the sister. Like, even I think.
It's crazy.
And I don't think they had found her body yet, but like they knew she was dead. So they're trying to find out where she was. And he just liked the interaction of calling them and talking to them. And it's like, could you imagine having to live with that? And they were like, we did it. It was so disgusting, but we did it because we wanted to know where our loved one was.
Right.
When they finally found him, and I can't remember what the tip off was, but he had been house sitting for a couple, and they had taken, I guess, like a notepad that was by the phone. And they did that thing where you take the pencil over the page to find out what they wrote. And then they found, I think, the note she wrote or something was on the pad.
Yeah, I do remember that case.
How crazy is that? I mean, it's a certain kind of evil to be like, I'm fucked up enough. Not only did I take your loved one, but I'm going to continue to torment you. And they're just like, it becomes almost like normal where they're like, they would play snippets from the phone calls where the sister would be talking to him and she'd be like, how are you? Okay. So like, what's new? Okay. Do you want to tell me where she is today?
That's that's nuts. I do remember that
kind of
case.
Mind fuck. That's insane.
And that's what this guy would do. And at first, this is one of the most disturbing details of this story to me. It's in a Washington Post article. It's in one of the Washington Post articles that we'll put up on the website called To Find Alleged Golden State Killer Investigators First Found His Great-Great-Grandparents. And there's a detail about his time as the East Area Rapist, where at first he was only attacking women who were home alone, which makes perfect sense.
Right.
And then at one point he just switches and starts exclusively attacking women who are home when their husbands are home. Mm-hmm. And there's this story in this Washington Times article. This guy was at a public forum about these rapes, and he stood up to speak and was like, well, clearly the guy's attacking women who are home alone, because if their husbands were home, the husbands would resist and obviously stop the attack. That guy's wife got raped a few months later while he was home.
He woke up to a flashlight in his face saying, she's going to tie you up. I'm going to tie her up. I guess he put cups and dishes on the guy's back. And he's like, if I hear them move,
I'll kill everyone in the house.
I'll kill you all. And so I guess he would ransack the house. He would cook food, drink beer. And then finally he took this woman to the living room, raped her. So that's okay. So I thought about this and I thought, what if they had a sign in sheet at this public forum? Like, would that help? But then again, if he was a law enforcement officer,
and
who would look at that?
Yeah. And I think because that's one of the theories, is that he was at that public meeting.
Yeah.
And decided, all right, I'll fucking stalk you and your wife for a few months and we'll see
a challenge.
Yeah, we'll see if this can work out.
Yep.
And the thing with the dishes, I didn't put it in the notes, but one of the things he did as the Visalia ransacker is he would lean dishes against all the entry doors. So if someone came in, he would hear that dish fall and could get the fuck out of there. So then he kind of transfers that technique here, where he's stacking plates on the husband's back and is like, if I hear him rattle, I'll fucking kill everybody. And he would also, he was so quiet that there were a lot of cases where people thought he was gone and they would get up to start moving and he would just jump out of the darkness and start the attack all over again.
Yeah.
So he was torturing people. It's fucking horrifying.
It just makes you wonder, like, what happened to him as a kid?
Yeah. And it's like,
they don't talk about that. They haven't addressed it yet.
Yeah, they haven't. I mean, I imagine they just haven't had a lot of time to deal with this guy and find out.
Study his brain yet.
Yeah, or if he's even going to talk.
That makes sense. And I'll be honest, he does not look like a talker from all the pictures.
Yeah.
He looks like he's milking the fact that he's 72 years old.
Oh, yeah. Like, they wheeled him in a wheelchair the first time he went.
And I'm not saying he doesn't. Maybe he does need to be in a wheelchair. But it's just like, they're like, I think they asked his name and he said yes. And that was like the only thing he said. And it just makes you want to run up and punch him in his face.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you motherfucker, you thought you were off scot-free.
Yeah. I hope he lives to a ripe old age in prison. Like, I hope he's got to spend a good decade or two. because that's always the thing. Like, someone like this gets arrested and then they go to prison and they die like 2 years later. And it's like, yeah, I guess that's justice.
Justice is not for us to impose, but it is just like, ugh, but this wasn't a good guy.
Right. And it, you know, at least it's closure for the victims' families.
100%. And again, I never thought that we'd find out who it was. So in a way, I kind of didn't pay a ton of attention to this case. I was just kind of like,
right,
it was a while ago. Nothing's really happened. You heard a little bit about it because of the Patton Oswalt thing and the book that just came out. But at the same time, it's like, this guy's probably dead. You're never going to find out who it is.
Yeah. And the Golden State Killer himself, like under that, during that era of this guy's crimes, he killed 10 people. And I mean, they were all really crazy, brazen crimes. But then, like, you sort of hear, oh, but he also committed all these rapes in the Sacramento area. And there's always kind of a disconnect where you're like, okay, but no one died. And then you look into the details and it's like,
yeah,
those people probably died on the inside after that shit happened.
Well, yeah.
Like, you would almost rather die in some of those situations.
Well, they have this one lady, I think her name is Jane. She's victim number 5. I've watched so much of this that I know she's victim number 5. And she talks about how she was laying in bed with her son, who was like 5 years old. And she goes, as soon as my husband left, I hear the garage go down. And minutes later, I hear running down the hall. And I think maybe my husband forgot something. And it's this guy running in. And all of a sudden, you know, he's angry and he carries my son out of the room. And I realize I'm going to be raped. And the whole time while I'm thinking about it, it's like my son. And I think she was like, oh, I hear him going to the kitchen. It sounds like he's making like eggs and bacon and like eating breakfast. And the fact that she goes, there was a recent interview with her and she goes, I cried when they caught him. I mean, she was probably in her 20s when this happened, and she's in her 60s now. And it's just like, oh, my God, this has not left her.
No, yeah. And it, like, this was such a horrific crime spree.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we've mentioned it yet, but he committed 51 of these fucking attacks. It all in this one really concentrated area of California. I mean, he was legitimately terrorizing these people. And this is before he even turns into the original Night Stalker.
It's like, how do you have that much time on your hands?
Yeah.
Weren't you in a bowling league or something?
I wonder if he had to be like combining his police duties with like,
stalking.
Yeah, I'm out on patrol. Yeah. So, but like a lot of times he was just walking. And
you know who that reminds me of is a BTK killer who was a meter maid essentially.
Yeah.
And who was very hard to deal with, who had everyone said he was odd. He had a very short temper. And that was one of the ways he stalked people, kind of like, I'm a public servant.
Yeah.
But he watched them and he tormented them.
Yeah. And that's what this guy, like, this guy legitimately tormented people. And the degree of stalking and reconnaissance that went into these crimes is so fucking unsettling. And as the East Area Rapist, he also eventually does commit one murder, two murders.
Yeah, it was a couple.
Yeah,
But how was the dog? Did the dog survive?
That's the thing. What happened is it was on February 2nd, 1978, and this couple named Brian and Katie Maggiore were walking their dog near this area where 5 other rapes had happened. And apparently some kind of confrontation breaks out, and they end up running. And he chases them and shoots them both dead in the street. And they figure out from there was a shoestring left at the scene. And they figure out from that it was this East Area Rapist.
Because they believe he did bring pre-knotted ropes and things and ligatures so that he could detain people just faster and easier to bring them.
Right.
Can you imagine you're sitting at home watching Seinfeld and like pre-making knots? Or MASH, probably back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I wonder how that happened, because he didn't normally attack people on the street. It was normally...
I think, though, he was so narcissistic I would assume there was some paranoia to a bit where he just... you know, he felt confronted for whatever reason,
or
and he had a trigger.
I wonder if he had been stalking this couple and just thought, well, when they walk their dog is the best time for me to do this.
Really?
It could be.
See, I felt like this one was random.
Yeah. Yeah. It could have been.
Because this was near the beginning of his, it sounds like, his murdering streak.
Well, this was one of the last crimes he commits as the East Area Rapist.
But there's only, I think, his second and third murder.
It's his second murder, because he committed the one murder as the Visalia Ransacker. Right. Then,
so he's growing more bold.
Right. And so he commits this murder, and he commits a few more rapes in that area and then moves on. But one weird thing that happens while he is active as the East Area Rapist, on December 11th, 1977, which is the same day a man that police believe was the East Area Rapist just narrowly escaped police, he called the police and told them what street he was going to commit an attack on that day. So, of course, the police stake it out and they find him, but he manages to get away. And on that same day, he sends a letter to the newspaper in town with this crazy poem that I was going to put in the notes, but it's so fucking long. If you go out, just even go out on the Wikipedia page for the Golden State Killer, it's there. But they think just the exhilaration of almost getting caught and getting away inspired him to write this poem and send it to the newspaper.
Yeah.
So not only is he that fucking bold about these crimes, we just caught him. Just yeah. now.
But again, I think he had that guise where he was like, if they find me, I'll be like, I'm just a guy on patrol. I'm one of you.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he had that out.
Right. So after the, like we said, he committed 51 rapes during this time span.
Like we said, if I've said it once, I've said yeah. it a million times.
Like we can't drive
stress
it home
it
enough.
51. Yeah.
Which is an unsatisfying number. Make it 50 or 52 to make it like
round.
More a week. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this guy's such a piece of shit. So then after this, he, for reasons they still haven't really figured out, he just moves to Southern California. I mean, it probably had something to do with him being the East Area Rapist and almost getting caught by police
or maybe
several times.
He took surfing lessons in Costa Rica like I did at a surf camp, and now he thinks he's a surfer.
That could be.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he retired to open like a cabana bar on the beach, like in the movies.
Like a Ron John surf shop?
Yeah, yeah.
Could be.
A big dog
he's
apparel?
Yeah, just out there waxing boards all day, hitting some curls.
I wonder if he got married or...
He did.
But I wonder if that's what the move to Southern California was about.
Oh, okay.
Because when they finally catch him, he's living with...
Following that tail?
He's living with his daughter and granddaughter.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm assuming his kids are probably... roughly our age, maybe a little older.
But one of them, someone we know.
Probably. Yikes.
Golden State Wild. Ring a bell?
Yeah. Yeah. I bet it's Chet.
Yep.
I bet it's Chet. Damn it, Chet.
They got that small dick in common.
Whoa. But the psychic said it was so thick.
But he didn't say, he said it was girthy.
It's like a plate.
Big. That he puts on a man's back, and if it moves... then he'll kill him.
With sex.
Well, I don't know how Chet works. I just know how his dad works.
Oh,
hi,
man.
Winter.
Hi, puppy.
Hi, Winter.
So, yeah, he moves to Southern California. He's active as the original Night Stalker or the Golden State Killer from October 1979 to May 1986. And the only survivors of any of his attacks at this point are the first people he attacks, which I believe were in Santa Barbara or Santa Barbara County. And he attacks this couple. And when he ties them up and leaves the room, they obviously start screaming very loudly. And one thing we will come to discover with the Golden State killings is very shitty neighbors. In a lot of cases, but not this case, mm-hmm. because they start screaming And their next door neighbor is an FBI agent. So he's like, on it. Whatever's happening, I'm on it.
So I don't know if you've heard me mention that People Magazine investigates yet. They had a show on Investigation Discovery.
Is it about the Golden State Killer?
It is.
Should people check it out?
They should. And there is a reenactment where I believe, so the wife is tied up and then the husband and the Golden State Killer start scrapping.
Right.
So the wife is able to get free and she runs out the front door screaming. And then, like in a bad horror movie, she trips and falls. So the Golden State Killer runs into the front yard and grabs her and starts to drag her back into the house, which I already think is ballsy.
That's
I'd be like,
very ballsy,
yeah. I think I'll just cut my losses and run home or run to my Schwinn that I stole and ride off into a creek bed. And again, in the reenactment, he looks over and then the FBI agent neighbor comes out onto his porch and was kind of like, what the heck?
Yeah.
And like sees him and then, you know, he decides to let the woman go and she falls and then he runs off again, grabs the bike and pedals off. And I believe at that point, the FBI agent jumps in his car, follows him. And, you know, the Golden State Killer knows that he's being followed. He sees some woods. He ditches the bike and he runs into the wilderness.
To think that you come that close to getting caught by an FBI agent and you're like, all right, I'll just be better next time. Like, I'll be more careful and I'll pull it off next time. Like, most people I would think would be like, all right, this is too much.
A close call. Like, this was my bottom.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a sign that I shouldn't stop raping and killing people. Yeah.
I don't remember what show it was or what case it was, but one of the creepiest things I ever heard on a true crime show, this woman was talking about how she was driving home and saw a woman. She described it as screaming for her life and trying to get out of this car. Like her top, the driver had no shirt on. He was this like huge dude. And the woman was just like weirded out. So she kept driving. And then they find that woman that was trying to get out of the car dead a few days later. And
She didn't pull over and call anyone or get home and call anyone?
Well, she called like when she got down the road, but she wasn't going to like stop.
I mean, when was it? Because it's true. I don't know that I would stop.
Well, no, that's not the point I'm making. But
I shouldn't interrupt.
She gets down the street and she makes the call, which is what, you know, probably the safe thing to do. But they still find that woman dead. And when she's interviewing the police about or interviewing with the police about what she saw, they're like, look, you should take a different way home from work going forward because you saw that guy's face and he saw you seeing his face and he still murdered that woman. Like most people would be like, well, I can't do it now because you saw my face. I have to just let her go and cut my losses.
You know what would have been badass is if she would have reversed and then like plowed into his car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Full speed.
And like, killed them both.
I wish there was a way for the girl to survive. But if they both have to go, they both have to go.
Yeah. I mean, if that's what it takes to dish out justice on these streets.
I mean, I guess it's for the betterment of whoever else he was inevitably going to kill.
Yeah. So yeah, this guy is bold. He is very bold.
The bold killer.
The Bolden State Killer.
I like it.
So his first actual murder of this period happens on December 30th, 1979. Dr. Robert Offerman and Dr. Deborah Alexandra Manning were found shot dead at Offerman's condo in Goleta, California. Neighbors heard the gunshots but ignored them because they attributed them to, quote, innocuous causes. Because you know how sometimes you're just firing a gun off in your condo for gigs, shits and gigs?
Yeah.
And the neighbors are like, oh, that's old gun store Larry firing off his automatic weapons in his condo.
Well, again, I don't know how this was back then, but I wonder now if I heard something like that, I'd be like, oh, it's a movie they're watching probably.
Yeah, I suppose.
Right?
It would have to be something like that. Or they just didn't know what gunshots sound like. Because if it's a condo that a two doctors are living in, it's probably pretty fucking nice.
Right.
And those people
maybe they're just not used to it, didn't
grow up hearing gunshots on the reg, so they just didn't know what they were hearing, maybe.
Do what white people do best, and they ignore it.
I think white people normally like run to the source of scary sounds, and that's why they always get killed first in horror movies.
Are you kidding? I think they want to pretend like it never happened. They don't want to be involved.
Yeah, I suppose there's that too. Yeah.
Like,
that's
okay, whew, it wasn't me.
It wasn't me. That was my Shaggy. Thank you.
I thought you were like burping or something.
No, that was Shaggy.
You know he's teaming up with Sting.
I know. I thought it was an April Fool's Day prank.
I thought somebody like superimposed their heads because I was like, what is Sting doing on a moped? And then all of a sudden I saw them in Andy Cohen's clubhouse and I was like, wait, they really are doing a thing together?
Sting was on Andy Cohen's clubhouse?
No. Okay, first of all, Sting just did something with Shaggy. Second of all, yes, they were in Andy Cohen's playhouse, clubhouse, whatever.
Okay. I guess if you're recording albums with Shaggy, it makes sense. So
I know. We all think he's better than that. It's fine.
So it's also believed he brought a dog to the scene of this crime.
I never heard that before.
Which is weird. They found very large paw prints from a dog. They believe he fed the dog leftover Christmas turkey, which that was chill of him. Give that good boy some turk.
Fair.
But why bring a dog?
I'll be honest. I had never heard this before, so I'm not sure where you got this from, and I'm not saying that it's inaccurate. Just I have never heard that.
Yeah. It's we'll put the links up. There's a Washington Post article. Two Washington Post articles. That's just a tweet. The New York Times. Yeah, I don't know. Christmas turkey.
Do you think it was winter that was with him?
I do not think it was winter.
And winter was just hobbling around on her three good legs with that weird toy in her mouth that has a leash on it.
The tampon tennis ball? Yes. Yeah, it's pretty great.
I could not figure out what it looked like, which is so weird because I've been putting tampons in for such a long time.
That's exactly what it looks like. It's shaped like one. It's got the string at the end.
And I kept pulling on the butt end of the string like five minutes ago.
It looks like a tampon for the woman in Shrek because it's gigantic and green.
Okay, I get it.
God damn it.
You could have done better than that.
Well, I didn't though. So here we are. So during this same attack, he also broke into two other units in the same complex and stole a bicycle at one point.
He likes bikes.
He sure does.
What if he has like really good calves? You know how bike riders have really good calves? I bet he does.
One especially noteworthy. Ooh,
could it have been Lance Armstrong?
He's only got the one ball, though. I don't know if he's got the
how's his dick size
for. Yeah.
Right.
That's a good point.
That's like the bigger or smaller question that we need to ask.
One of the more noteworthy killings that happened during this period, he kills a couple named Keith and Patrice Harrington on August 19th, 1980. Patrice is a nurse in Irvine. Keith Harrington is a medical student at UC Irvine. And the attack wasn't that much different from the others, which were basically in these attacks, it was a lot like the East Area Rapist. But then he would either shoot the people or bludgeon them to death at the end instead of leaving those pesky witnesses behind.
The interesting thing is the Night Stalker Part 2, Richard Ramirez, who actually is my favorite serial killer. The one I find most interesting. I shouldn't say my favorite, but the one I do find most interesting. He also started like in the LA area and then at the end of his run ended up in Orange County, which was completely off the beaten path. So,
yeah. What made this particular attack important is that Keith Harrington's brother in the years after spent nearly $2 million of his own money supporting California Proposition 69.
What number nice. Is it? What?
Proposition 69. Which allows for DNA collection from all felons and certain other criminals in California. So this was a case that led to a important breakthrough in DNA collection in the state of California. But nevertheless, he killed 10 people in total during this time. Most of the attacks happened between 79 and 81, with one stray killing that just kind of came out of nowhere in 1986, where it was a girl who I think her parents had left on vacation or something. And I bet he was just living nearby and knew they were leaving and was like,
I've got one more in me.
For old time. Let's get the gang back together.
The gang of one.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. We're all here.
Yeah. Gang's already here.
Let's go out and do this.
So finally, on April 24th, 2018, the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department arrested 72-year-old Joseph DeAngelo, a former police officer in Auburn and Exeter, California, in connection with the Golden State Killer case. He was caught using a genealogy website, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Basically, as we've talked about before, Paul Holes. Is it Pete Holes? It's Paul Holes. I've been thinking Pete this whole time. But
no, Paul.
Paul Holes.
Paul.
He's an investigator and DNA expert. He uploaded the killer's profile to a site called GED Match, which, what a weird name. It seems like a place where you would upload your DNA to find other people who didn't graduate high school and just got their GED instead or something. I don't know.
I'm surprised that wasn't a joke you put in the notes, but no, this one just came. That just one, right now is organic. I liked it.
Yeah, that one. I pulled that out at the last minute.
Yeah, I guess I was always looking at it like GEDmatch, which how intrinsically he investigated this. So you said before he is 9 months from retirement, have been investigating this case for 24 years. It was his last ditch attempt to crack it. The site he uploaded the profile to allows users to search a database of roughly 1 million profiles. This was only possible because one especially diligent pathologist saved a duplicate rape kit from one of the GSK's 1980 attacks. So they also look at family connections. Through that,
right,
the site returned a match, sorta. It found 10 to 20 distant relatives of the killer. From there, Holes' team started building family trees and looking for common ancestors, finally locating the killer's great-great-great-grandparents. Like, that's some shit. Like, at first
that
when I heard
some shit,
it was through, like, DNA randomly, I was like, oh, it's somebody like me who would just go in and be like, I saw Ancestry.com and I want to know how much Norwegian I have in me. Like, I would think it would be something like that. But he used this to literally go back and start with his great-great-great-grandparents. And then
They start building family trees.
Yes.
And they
and then
use
ruling people out that way.
They use census data, old newspaper clippings, a gravesite locator to kind of find all of these different relatives. Mm-hmm. And he mentions in one of these articles that when you do that, these trees can build into like thousands and thousands of people.
Of course.
And they had to go through every one of these people.
Right.
And it took them 4 months to build out all of these family trees, and they eventually narrowed it down to two people.
Yep.
And there was one guy that they said looked really good on paper and could have been the killer, but then he wasn't a DNA match. They tested one of his family members. So that left DeAngelo, and they start surveilling him.
Mm-hmm.
And how did they end up getting, did he just throw something away?
Okay, so from all of the shows that I've watched about stuff like this, yeah, they'll follow him to like a mall or something. And if he goes to like an Orange Julius, if he throws away a cup, they will put it
in a bag
and they'll use that sample. So they don't say what the sample was, but that's essentially what they did to find out that it was him. And then I also thought too, so if you're drawing out the tree, and I just imagine they're doing it with like pencil and paper, like at one point they wrote his name down and to be like, wow, that name ended up being the Golden State Killer, where I'd probably be like, it's none of these people.
Yeah.
This is a shot in the dark. But he found it this way. This guy is brilliant and good looking.
Brilliant and good looking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they get his DNA sample from an item he discarded and they test it. And he's been charged with, I think, 12 counts of murder in connection to the Golden State killings. And I don't know. I'm assuming he'll be charged later with the East Area Rapist stuff, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll charge you with one thing and not charge you with the other thing in case that first prosecution goes. Like when an NFL team decides to kick the field goal on third down, because then if you botch the snap, you just have fourth down to try it over again. So who knows if he'll even be charged on the rest of this stuff. But
if they get one conviction, it'll be tied up in appeals anyway. Right. And again, dependent upon if he gets the death penalty or not. But he's essentially going to live the rest of his life in prison. So I'm glad he at least got that. It prompted me, after I read your notes, to look up the Bill Cosby case.
Okay.
Because there's been stuff on social media that says, you know what, he's old enough, he's blind, leave him alone. I've seen posts like that, and it's so angering because it's like, you know what? Like, he did. I do believe that he like fucked up and did these things he's accused of.
I believe he did. Yeah.
And the fact that he's so
jokes about it on his albums.
The fact that he's so indignant about it too just makes you want to like punch him in his blind little eyes. And
right.
And then that Tom Mesereau with the white hair, the fluffy white hair, who also.
Should we get Aphrodite Jones back on to talk about that?
I think we should. He was also the lawyer during the Michael Jackson pedophilia case.
Because his whole thing in the Michael Jackson thing is, no, Michael Jackson got fucking railroaded. And that was Aphrodite Jones wrote a book about that.
I would love to get Aphrodite Jones on to talk about, you're saying it is the Cosby Bill Cosby thing.
Yeah.
Let's do it. I might see her at CrimeCon day one.
Ask her if she'll do it.
Yeah, I think she'll do it. I would love to have her on. I do want to talk about it. I think it's interesting when people are like, well, they're this far along, let them go. The people who got murdered or raped or in any of these situations where they're victims, like even if there's a small amount of justice, it's justice. And if they have to end out the rest of their days like this, the people that they victimized didn't have a chance or a choice in what happened to them. And some of them, one of the girls, and it wasn't mentioned here, it was mentioned in the People magazine investigates. I know I haven't talked about it yet. but it was this girl who was 13 years old, and she goes, I knew everything about that case. And they talked about crime being down during that point because, like, people were so scared to rob places because everyone had guns and security and everything else. And she goes, I read so much about this case when he came in. She goes, I knew it was him. She goes, so it was me and my mom. So her mom was probably in her 30s.
Yeah.
And she goes, and there's me. And she goes, I was waiting to find out. I think he bound them both. And she goes, I was waiting to find out who was going to put the cups on. And when I heard him put them on my mom, I knew I was going to be raped. So he raped her. And then, you know, whenever he left, and she was like, I hopped over and I think started screaming. And then like a neighbor came and like let her loose. But she goes, he wanted me to be scared and I refused. As a 13-year-old girl?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, okay, so now she has a nose piercing, but it looks like that's the worst thing that happened to her. But at the same time, it's like, wow. I mean, again, she so vividly, 20, 30 years later, remembers exactly what happened. And then her mom was there. And it's like, this is the stuff that will never leave you. It's formed, you know, future relationships and...
Yeah, there's no age limit on when a person should get punished for something like this.
I agree. Like, I agree. And I hope if he dies happen to him.
The day after he goes to prison, at least the fucking intent to punish him there.
They do. So they've been looking at brains. You know, scientists have been researching brains for people with like Aaron Hernandez, CTE.
Right.
It would be interesting to do more brains because you don't hear a lot about that. I think Ted Bundy actually was like, study my brain.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting to see if they have like a common defect or something that makes them, because I think it's a frontal lobe. Like if it gets fucked up, you don't have reasoning.
Well, that's a thing that it comes up in a lot of serial killer cases where a lot of them as kids suffered some sort of head trauma. And it's obviously not really an excuse, but it's also like that's a thing. Right. Like if nothing else, if we can establish that link enough times, at least going forward, if a kid has a head injury like that, fucking put him on serial killer watch and make sure he doesn't start murdering and raping prostitutes in his locale. Like, there's no harm in...
Or because killing animals.
Right. And people... there's a tendency to want to tie this to like, oh, they hate women or like, and it's like, yeah, but also a lot of people hate women and don't do this.
Right.
So there's something else at work that needs to be examined. And there is no crime in admitting, yeah, maybe it is mental health to some extent.
Right.
And maybe it, like, what's the harm in, okay, this kid suffered a head injury. We need to watch him kind of the rest of his life and make sure he's not, you know, suffering repercussions from that that we can't see. Like, I think that was a lot of what happened with Aaron Hernandez. Like, he had one of the worst cases of CTE that has ever been seen in a brain so far.
So you're saying just monitor him with like regular checkups?
I mean, there's got to be something like that. There should be a concussion protocol for life.
Well, I mean, you kind of talked about in your notes the thing you say, is this a good thing? And you talk a little bit about freedom. So, I mean, does that kind of go with the whole your notes on freedom? Because you talk specifically about like the DNA, like if we start sharing
It's not so much me. It's a thing people have brought up.
Okay.
And that in that the way this guy was caught, it's something there's going to be no uproar or questioning over how it happened because it's a cool story and it took down a legitimate monster. But it's also it's like the police going through, like your family members are being used to inform on you without their consent.
Yeah.
Basically. And it's a thing where you're not going to hear a lot of people bring up privacy concerns and how alarming, because that it is kind of alarming that they solved the case this way. That
I like it.
No, I mean, yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, yeah. We just talked a couple weeks ago on an episode of Unpops about mask laws. In the 50s and 60s, when the KKK was just dominating the South, they passed all these laws in 18 states. They passed laws that were like, fine, if you're going to a protest, you can't wear a mask. And people were like, fuck yeah, because fuck the KKK. And even back then, a lot of people were like, okay, but that's a thing that could get used against you in the future because you're being very broad with it and you're just saying no masks at protests. So now fast forward to just a couple weeks ago, there are all these there's this Nazi rally in Georgia and all of these counter protesters show up and the police arrest everyone wearing a mask, all the counter protesters. And they're like, we're here to protest against Nazis. Why are you arresting us? And they're like, because you can't wear a mask at a protest, dude. And they're like, well, that was written because of the KKK, but it wasn't written that way. It was written very broadly in a way that you as a person on the other side could be in the crosshairs of that at some point in the future.
Yeah, but I feel like that's, I don't know. I don't want to say like it's insignificant, like, okay, you know what I mean? Like, they're not serving a hard time. Like, yeah, it's annoying and I understand like what they're talking about. But at the end of the day, like, this obviously helped bring down one of the worst killers in California history, if not U.S. history. I don't know. I'm all for it.
It's the kind of thing. It's like after 9/11, we passed a lot of crazy shit because 9/11 happened and we were very scared.
Right.
And most of it isn't going to prevent another 9/11 and it's just us being spied on now.
Right.
But when something traumatic like this happens, that's kind of our kind of go-to response is, okay, we'll give this up if you can fix this problem.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's obviously great that this guy got caught. But I do get the privacy concerns that people are bringing up. It's just a thing that you have to hope doesn't get abused in the future.
I mean, I hope it doesn't. But again, if it can not only catch killers, but also possibly exonerate killers, I'm all for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be interested how far into exoneration goes.
I might have talked about this on here. I definitely know I talked about it on White Ryan True Crime, but they had something called Dallas DNA, where they would take select cases and try them. Like, again, they were like, okay, if your argument is compelling enough, we'll retry your DNA because it wasn't around 40 years ago.
Right.
And see if it matches this rape. And there were people who had been in there since they were 20, now they're 60, and they're like, yeah, it wasn't yours. Okay, you're going to go. You can't sue us. Here's a toothbrush. And
right.
you've got nothing else. And then the lawyers are like, okay, we got you some clothes at JCPenney's. And do you have relatives you can stay with? Okay. You still have to register as an offender, even though we exonerated you. And you can't sue us. Good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy, but these people are like, but I'm free.
Yeah. But that's shitty.
But they also found people... What part? The fact that they were ever convicted?
The fact that they were ever convicted and the fact that when they get out, they're like, okay, but you can't ever sue us.
Yes.
Like, you should...
But you crave your freedom that badly.
They shouldn't have to sue you.
100%.
Like, they should just get... There should be a standard thing, and it should be very high. There should be a standard set amount that you are awarded if it's proven you were wrongly convicted and sent to prison. Like, that is a no fucking brainer. Like, you should be given that check on your way out the door.
Like, this many years, times,
because it's so,
however much money a day.
It's so hard to readjust to society after being in prison. Even if you're in prison for a couple years, there are people who, that's enough. They're just like, all right, I'm in and out of prison the rest of my life now.
Yeah.
But in these cases, we're talking about people who... went to prison before there were smartphones, before there was Uber, before there was fucking satellite TV. And they're just like, what is this world I'm living in? And also, I have to register as a convicted felon, even though I didn't do what they said I did.
Right.
And it's like, those people deserve some money. Like, they deserve money, and they deserve a lot of assistance in getting their life back in order.
But think about even like the basic commonalities. Like, if we were to have a conversation, it's like, so what do you do for a living, Adam? Oh, I don't have a job. I'm having trouble getting hired because I have a felony. So you have to go through the interview process. We have to keep telling them what happened and put it on your resume. And then what do you say? Where were you for the last 20 years? What do you tell people?
Yeah.
I would lie.
Prison. Yeah.
I would lie. And I would say I was a bartender at Sandals in the Bahamas.
Yeah. But fuck this guy, though.
Oh, totally fuck this guy.
He hopefully spends a lot of time in prison, and I hope it's very unpleasant and painful and an awful experience. Because
he doesn't look like he's ever smiled in his life.
He is. This guy is a walking piece of trash.
Yeah, like, he is trash.
It would be too easy, but this is the kind of criminal where, like, if the judge was just like, get on your knees and just shot them in the head in the courtroom, we'd all be like, that was a bit much, but yeah, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Don't do it to everyone going forward, just like this thing, but that was fine
for him.
We need
some old school justice.
Yeah, for him it was fine.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing with this. Like, whatever it took to catch this fucking guy, it's like, we can deal with the legalities and technicalities of it later, but it's a really good thing that this guy...
Good job, Mr. Holes.
...got caught. Good job, Mr. Holes. Going to be plugging a lot more holes going forward, you big stud. Unless he's married. I wonder if there's a Mrs. Holes.
Of course he's married. And he probably has like 2.5 beautiful children.
2.5, yep.
And a nice house and a white picket fence.
And I bet it's the torso of the half one, and it's a very attractive torso.
Of course.
Yeah.
And they're all like track leets.
Track leets.
They run track.
I think those are just athletes. It's a pretty blanket term. It covers anyone
who
does.
But they especially run fast.
Stuff. Oh, okay. That makes sense.
I do remember seeing an interview, and I'm pretty sure it was on People, where he did talk about running.
Oh, nice.
So I'm just assuming his kids followed suit.
Sure, yeah. So, yeah, we talked... I also had stuff about Patton Oswalt in the notes, but we talked about that up top. But it is an interesting twist that she was researching this book at the time of her death.
What a crazy death for her.
Yeah, undiagnosed heart condition.
And in your sleep, that's the way to go. Not on a plane, I'll tell you that much.
No, unless you're sleeping on the plane.
I am going to take some melatonin tomorrow.
Melatonin's great. The only thing about it... Have you taken it before?
Every night.
Oh, you can't take it every night because If you take it every night, your body stops producing it, and then you're just...
Well, then how do I fall asleep?
By taking more melatonin. Like, your body becomes... Your body stops producing it, so you just are... You're not supposed to take it every night. Have you ever tried valerian?
No.
Try valerian root.
Okay.
It'll do the trick. It smells like feet dipped in rancid ass. But it will,
I cannot wait.
It will knock you out. It's just in a capsule. So you just, with water.
That's how I prefer my stinky feet, in a capsule.
Yeah. I use it to smuggle weed through the airport because it's so pungent, no one would ever smell the weed in that bottle.
I just use my vaginal cavity.
Yeah, I usually already have stuff up there. Right. Yeah, I usually, I put my liquids up there.
We all
there.
Have our places.
My above 3 ounces.
Yeah, like I don't want to check in this bag. What can I put in my vaginal cavity?
Right, right. Yeah,
it's
I
like put a third carry on.
Put my shoes up there, things like that.
That way you don't have to take them off when you go through.
Off. Exactly.
Security.
Smart.
Fair.
So that's the Golden State Killer. There's obviously way, way more to the story, and you'll hear lots about it on various documentaries. I don't know if, Carrie, if you've seen one recently that you could recommend that people might want to watch.
Nope.
No? Yeah. Mm-mm. So just anything that's out there should be fine. Mm-hmm. What do we have to plug before we get out of here? Patreon.com/unpops. I don't know. Is this a free episode? Even if it's not, go subscribe again.
Yeah, this is a great network. It'd be great if you guys would support. We still get a lot of nice emails. They typically come to me because I think people are a little bit scared of Caitlin. But I love it. I love the interactions with people. And I don't care if they will eventually kill me or not. I will answer each and every one of you. But yeah, we get a lot of nice messages from people who are like, oh my gosh, like I stumbled upon your podcast and I love it and I binged and we love you all. And thank you for listening.
We do love you all. Mm-hmm. And, I'm on tour with Chet Wild. Come see me. Although I don't...
But feel free to leave as soon as Chet gets on stage.
Well, he's going up before me, so...
Well, come late.
That's fine. Unpops.com/tour. You can get tickets for
and
all those
demand
shows.
Demand half your money back.
May 16th through the 20th, we will be on the road telling jokes at your face holes. And then I'm moving this month. Good times. All right. Let's get the fuck out of here.
Let's do it.
Carrie, say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you.